Here at Millennial Crisis, we acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We also pay our respects to the elders, both past and present, always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
What really helped was leaving the safe setup that you've got, your nest really. And it was just a lot easier for me to just go, okay, well, it wasn't easy, but for me to just go ahead and do it. And then, yeah, in retrospect, I'm kind of happy I did. And no, I don't own a house. I don't have a partner, a boyfriend. I don't have, you know, like the perfect lifestyle, but I've grown so much and I've lived different lives, which I would have never have had or have the experience or have the reflection and the introspection in order for me to be where I'm at, to now say, actually, yeah, I am at the right place and I am where I've always wanted to be, which was to start a business.
Hey, it's Demi, and welcome back to another episode of the Millennial Crisis Podcast. I cannot wait for you to listen to today's conversation because this guest has inspired me so much, and I really think this conversation is going to empower you to take an action in your life, to make an impact, and consider what areas of your life you really want to create change in, not just for yourself, but really for other people. It's going to help you identify the areas that perhaps you've struggled in or the areas that you see systems are failing and make you want to take one small step into creating change in that place. Our guest's name is Junie and she is the founder of Propel Innovations. Propel Innovations creates opportunities for businesses to engage with a broader range of audiences through strategic foresight and innovative UX solutions. She bridges the gap between technology and people and really gets you thinking about who is creating our technology. Are we continuing to see the systemic problems that are happening in our real life into technology, and how can we change that? Junie has very much taken an unconventional approach to her career. She is led with curiosity and she has not been afraid to do things differently than the way other people do it. I honestly can't wait for you to listen to this chat, so let's jump straight into episode 73 of the podcast, How to Make an Impact in Your Own Way.
Yeah, so my name is Junie Baptiste Poitevien. It's a French-Haitian name. I'm 35 years old, hitting 36 very soon. And I'm the founder of Propel Innovations. And I'm on a mission to build, to design and develop safe and unbiased experiences of technology.
Amazing. I have been pronouncing your name in the most Australian bogan way ever. So I need to be saying Junie.
So if French speakers will call me Junie, but Anglophones call me Junie. So growing up in Montreal, like I'm from a bilingual city, so, or more like trilingual plus city languages. But yeah, like Anglophones would always call me, like in primary school, my English teachers or Anglophone teachers would call me Junie, but my French or Francophone teachers would call me Junie. So you can call me Junie, like you don't have to call me Junie. Yeah, so born and raised Montrealer. My parents are from Haiti, so a Caribbean island that shares with Dominican Republic, so south of Cuba. I was born and raised in Montreal, lived there for 25 years, and then left 10 years ago. I was working at a bank, and I had finished studying my bachelor's in policy and community and public affairs, and I was like doing really well at the bank, and I thought, really, is that what my life is going to look like? And I had big dreams and aspirations. I still do. But yeah, I quit my job, gave up my apartment, and decided to move to Mexico. And at the time, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to actually do to earn money. I'm good at languages. So I figured, well, perfect. Like I had done some research and I found out that a lot of people who travel abroad will teach English. So I did my CELTA. So it's the Cambridge University English language teaching for for people who speak other languages. So I did that course, and then yeah, I used that to be able to finance my lifestyle as an expat. And probably the best, it is the best experience ever. I still remember my dad being like, oh my God, you're leaving like a very comfortable job and you're going to move to Mexico and teach there, like, you know, already the education system and teachers don't get paid well. And he's like, plus you're doing that like in a country where, you know, that's even less comfortable, really. So I just stuck to my guns and I went, and, you know, years down the line, like, he's been super supportive for everything I've done and still is. And both my parents, my mom and my dad. So yeah, I wouldn't have changed it for anything. But yeah, 10 years later, and through a lot of failures and learning and ups and downs, like, I finally am now doing the thing I've always loved or always wanted to do since I was 9 years old, and it was to become an entrepreneur. I sort of thought, you know, I'd retire by 40, but as I told you, I'm 35, turning 36 soon. So unless I can manage to still get to that goal by then, but if not, like, it's been a journey for me to get to where I'm at right now. Yeah, like I said, I wouldn't change it for anything.
Amazing. So you were around 25 when you decided to give up the safe kind of life that we're supposed to live and everyone's kind of aiming for, or society kind of tells us is the way to win at life or succeed at life. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, look, I struggled with that sort of thinking, mainly because I grew up in an environment or with parents and in like private schools that always like sort of pushed you to do better and do your best. And, you know, coming from a migrant family, like, my parents fled Haiti when they were quite young for political and economic instability. So for them, and, you know, they struggled as well to find their mark in Canada. And this is the same situation everywhere in the world. Not to say that we didn't live well, we lived pretty well, but it was just, I just do remember seeing my parents sacrifice a lot. So it was inevitable then to go, okay, like, you're working at a bank, fantastic, like, your life is set. But for me, I kind of always struggle with that mentality that, you know, in your 20s, you're meant to like get married, have kids, buy a house. I was so anti all of that. I was like, no, your 20s are there to like live your life, you know, go and explore. Like, I've always wanted to travel. I felt like the whole family house and all that could come later. You know, I didn't want to be in my 50s or in my 60s and only then start traveling and start doing the things and go exploring. In retrospect, I realized that I actually wasn't happy trying to fit in. I felt like all I was doing was, you know, hitting roadblocks or just hitting walls and, you know, not necessarily coping, but I had no idea of any of that. What really helped was leaving the safe setup that you've got, your nest, really. And it was just a lot easier for me to just go, okay, well, it wasn't easy, but for me to just go ahead and do it. And then, yeah, in retrospect, I'm kind of happy I did. And no, I don't own a house. I don't have a partner, a boyfriend. I don't have, you know, like the perfect lifestyle, but I've grown so much and I've lived different lives, which I would have never have had or have the experience or have the reflection and the introspection in order for me to be where I'm at, to now say, actually, yeah, I am at the right place and I am where I've always wanted to be, which was to start a business. So you just have to literally just jump into the unknown and go away from your nest, just like birds do, you know, or any kind of animal. Eventually, you just leave what you know. Your parents sort of teach you certain values, but at the end of the day, it's life that's going to teach you a lot more. You've got the foundation, so just get out there and test it out, really.
Totally. I think it's so nice to hear that story, I think. And one thing that our listeners and our community struggle with, and I still struggle with to this day, even though this whole podcast and the concept around it is to fuck the way it's supposed to go, you know, not have these rigid ideas of how they are, but we often do get stuck in thinking, am I doing this right? It's always that constant reflection back on what our parents did or what people around us are doing. And the whole idea is that we do live so much more privileged lives now that we have the opportunity to hold off and not get married for a while, not have to have kids so early on. Like, if we look at it as women in particular, popular and we go, people were getting married because that was survival. Do you know what I mean? Like, how else yeah. are you gonna like move on? Like, you know? And so you go, okay, well, if we flip the script and say, sure, we're not exactly where we need to be or want to be still right now, and there are plenty of issues, systemic issues that we're gonna get into a little bit later that are a problem, but these privileges we should be taking advantage of and not be living these lives we thought were going to bring us happiness, and that the experience element that we can look back on and go, if I died tomorrow, you know what? I did pretty well.
Yeah. And you mentioned like really important thing, like the happiness part. I noticed that seeking happiness is disillusional. I find for me, what has kept me going is living that meaningful life. And also, like you mentioned about, you know, if I die tomorrow or like in the next hour after this podcast, like, what do I want to be known for, right? It's that legacy. And it goes back to the why and the reasons why I left. It was reasons why I went into business, because I was like, you know, like I've never looked at that, at these things as things that I aspire for. Like I aspire to like make big changes in the world. I aspire to like discover and like learn from cultures. You know, you end up living and breathing that. Not to say that there's anything wrong if that's what you want, but at the end of the day, it's like put yourself in a situation that's completely uncomfortable to really assess what your why is in your life. Like, what kind of meaningful life you want to live, what kind of legacy that you want to live. And I still remember I have a friend who used to tell me, or he once told me, write your eulogy, you know, like what would you want people to remember you for? And I thought that was pretty good, because I thought, yeah, you're right. Like, you know, what do I want to be remembered for? And yeah, so those little things may sound a bit morbid, but there's a reason behind it. It's because when the challenges come, and they come quite often, you often ask yourself, okay, why am I doing this again? And then you remember why. And look, it's not to say that even in the past 2 years of living abroad, like it's been easy. I think I remember more challenges than I remember like good times, but overcoming these challenges and learning more about myself and continuously learning, really, like you never get to a point where you figure everything out. But I've gotten to a point where I'm like, I know where I'm going and I know it's going to be difficult, and it's okay to cry at sometimes, and it's okay to feel lost sometimes. But I've had to learn to build a support system. I've had to learn to know about myself. So I'm sure. So then when comes a time when I'm ready to date again, then I can go, okay, cool, I'm ready for that, right? But not, I'm going to go and do it because everyone wants us to do it. Because who am I living my life for? It's not for you. I'm living it for myself. You can be inspired afterwards. That's another thing. But at the end of the day, I need to be the one that can take care of herself.
No, that's amazing. I feel like we already like dived so deep in the first few sentences, and I'm loving it. And I find, again, like, one of the reasons that I think I had originally started the podcast was because when you do choose to, I guess, live life for you and not by rule books or like other people's definition of success, it is really difficult. And I constantly am, like you mentioned as well, I know people that are doing it will not shy away from telling you like there's going to be ups and downs, or they'll always give a caveat like there's nothing wrong with that and this is going to be hard too, you know. And then you know, yeah, they've really been in the trenches, because it is really hard. And one of the reasons I did it was because I was like, I need reminders all the time of people that are doing it and that there is success and that there's all these things, and they're just genuine, happy and like cool people that I want to like know and be inspired by. And that doesn't mean you have to have like millions of followers or millions of dollars or whatever. You just like, you believe in something and you know what you're doing your life for and things. And I think you meet the best people and you get to explore, like you said, different lives that you get to lead in your one, which is the coolest thing ever. Like, who wouldn't want to lead multiple lives in their life? Yeah, I just think it's really cool that we get to have these conversations and we get to do these things. And it's really funny because in our chats kind of pre-podcast, we didn't even get to touch on this stuff. So this is also also thrown me a loop, because I'm like, oh my God, there's so many other amazing things you're doing as well that we've got to talk about too. So let's get a little bit more into your mission, because one thing I find also for anyone who's listening who is in that stuck feeling, maybe your Junie when she was in her banking life and in that safe, secure life, but you're feeling something's off or missing. What I often find is those people that do take the time to explore really get to a why, and they can always go back to that. And the reason you can be so confident in your why is because you've explored your not, you know, I don't know how to like say it the other way, but yeah. The shit that you're like, I never want to touch that again, you know?
Yeah.
And the exploration allows you to open your eyes to the world and see like, okay, what are the parts that I think I can do something to contribute more positively to? Yeah, which brings me to Propel Innovations and the work that you're doing there and your design thinking and the way you're wanting to create better experiences for people. So I think the best way to start is to explain to everybody what you do.
What I'm doing is I'm building this business to help from small businesses to medium businesses to put people first before you build a business idea or before you build technology. I'm mainly focusing on technology because I've often noticed that a lot of tech out there aren't necessarily built for people or to solve real problems for real people. So that's what I'm doing. So user experience design, or based on design thinking principles. And there are so many terms, like as I entered that world, like everyone's going to call it differently, product designer, customer experience. But at the end of the day, you're following the same process and the same method. And it's like, there's a problem. Discover what their problems are and have those people tell you what their needs are, what their expectations are, what do they like, what don't they like, and why. And from that, what's really great is that you're getting exclusive access into their mind, to their emotions and their motivations, and you understand their challenges. And with them, you can go and look at, okay, well, let's define what the problem is based on what you've told me. And based on what they're telling you, they're also validating what your assumptions are of their problem. And then from there, you kind of ideate a few solutions with them. You try a few things out with them, test it out, get feedback. Might work, it might not work, but keep going back to the drawing board just to make sure that they're part of the process of building what you're building to solve their problem. And you're prototyping it and you're testing it before you go out and launch something. You know, so that's what I'm in, like in the user experience design service. Now, what I want to bring in terms of different aspects is to look at it more as, well, when you're building something, think about a wider community. Think about the people who you're often forgetting, right? So whether they're Black communities, disabled communities, ethnic backgrounds, cultural, linguistically, like look at how that might also affect your solution or your design. Because one thing that really struck me and was my why as to why I wanted to get into business, and especially in tech, was the fact that there wasn't enough representation of people who are what society calls underrepresented. I hate that term, but I'm going to use it for the purpose of this conversation, right? So, you know, whether it's Black or Indigenous or people of color, whether you're disabled, whether you're intersectional and whatnot, right? Like the list goes on. But it always never ends up representing people who look like me. And I was, and on top of that, I kept thinking, well, who are the founders, female founders or Black female founders that look like me? Because I can't even name one, right? But also the other why was, I remember once reading an article in the Harvard Business Review that was talking about AI. And they were saying things like, okay, I'm going to ask you and I'm going to see what you think. Do you know who Serena Williams is? Do you know Michelle Obama?
Yes.
Do you know Oprah Winfrey?
Yes.
Okay. But an AI doesn't know any of these three people. And can you guess why? So they're dark skin. So the fact that they're dark skin, the AI has an error rate of 35% because it doesn't recognize anyone that's light to dark skin. When I read that, I remember not even getting angry about it. I was actually like, well, yeah, obviously. Yeah. If the people who are coding or programming these products are an AI, what do you expect? Of course, they're not going to be able to, you know what a dark-skinned woman looks like, you know, like, or even recognize someone like Oprah Winfrey, because you and I know Oprah Winfrey, and I'm sure all your listeners probably were like, yeah, of course I know them, but an AI doesn't. So at the end of the day, you ask yourself, so who's designing and developing these technologies, and why? And why are we like continuing to like create more biased technology? So I want to be able to bring with Propel Innovations that mission of creating safe and unbiased experiences in the design and development of technology, so that we can protect the needs of Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And then this way, we can actually build things that solve real problems for real people, because we're never counted in data. We're always missed. And it just gets to that point where, you know, we live in a world now where you can no longer make mistakes around gender, around race, ethnicity, and so on and so forth, because it means that I can consider you and say, okay, I know she's Australian because I can hear from her accent when she's speaking English, but I could also tell that she's from a different background just based on her family name. So how do we ask Demi, hey, look, we know you have a certain problem. You know, can you tell us more about it? Why this is bothering you? And unpack and ask questions around things like, how does that affect you culturally, ethnically, racially, so on and so forth? Because at the end of the day, it defines who you are. Although our societies like to categorize us in boxes, in ways to place levels of superiority and inferiority, but it doesn't mean that we can't actually create a world where there's a lot more equity, and where we come to a point where you wouldn't have to call a Black person an underrepresented person if there's more representation in those spaces. So being the go-getter that I am, being that same person from 10 years ago who's like, just, you know, stuff everything, I was like, look, I don't have a tech background, but I think I've got the skills, the ability, the knowledge, and the passion for it. And, you know, I can bring transversal skills from, you know, professional background, having worked in different industries, but also speaking different languages, being someone who's from an ethnic background. So as I mentioned, my parents are from Haiti. I've never been to Haiti, but, you know, I was raised in two different cultures. At home, I was raised Haitian. Outside of home, I'm raised Canadian. And coming from Montreal, there's even that bigger pride of being Francophone and whatnot, right? So all of these things actually matter. And I'd love to be able to get to that point where, you know, in 5 years' time, we're like known for having designed and developed unbiased experiences of technology.
It's amazing. And thank you for breaking that down so plainly. When it comes to like UX design, and like you were saying, is it product design? What is it? Because they are all so closely intertwined. I find when it comes to things like this, there's always a lot of confusion because people throw a lot of jargon around and like to spew things around and show off how much they know. And so I thank you for explaining that so beautifully. And I know that our audience, the listeners right now, will have clearly understood that. One thing I want to go back to is what you were saying, and it was in your pitch as well, about the AI and how it didn't recognize the darker skinned women. And I think it's really interesting to know, like, I used to work in product development, and I remember like I went to a conference once and I was trying to explain in the most like layman way what machine learning and AI is, and how like we're very, very far off machines taking over the world. Like it takes so long for machine learning and AI to actually work and like get working. And the process of it is like these machines work off patterns. So they have to show the machine like hundreds and thousands of photos of the same thing. Let's say it's like dog and cat before they figure it, like the machine can say, this is a dog, this is a cat. And then it continues to get smarter the more images and different types of cats and dogs that it sees or whatever, you know. When you said that story, what it did for me was just show like, you cannot deny from this what it actually tells you is like, there really is not enough representation, because they clearly didn't have enough photos to show the machine to be like, well, this is the variations of women that we have. This is the variation of races we have. This is the variation. This is the shapes and sizes people come in, you know? And it'd be interesting if you looked at every like underrepresented group, how I'd assume similar things would happen. And then if we look at that translated in real life, you can see it's only been in the past, what, 3 to 5 years that we've been able to see a lot more if we're looking at even makeup and you look at foundation shades and things like that. Something that I've never been to a store, and sure, I might struggle finding a color match or the right specific color so it's exactly on my skin tone, but I'm sure the experience for you over the past few years and growing up has been completely different. And again, like, everyone goes back to the concept, I always bring it back to the concept of like, whatever you're doing, the way you navigate your life, if you're not having bumps in your road every day, there's privilege there, right? The world is built for you directly. And so looking at someone else, people are so easy to dismiss, like, well, that doesn't happen to me, so how does it happen to you? It's like, yeah, that's the point, right? That is the point. It's not happening to you. It's happening to you because somebody who's creating it is not creating for you. And so I think it's a shame that it's taken and continues to take this long for us to get to a place where we can all be on have a similar, smoother experience walking through life in general. But it is really nice to know that we have people that are wanting to create that for everybody, you know? And what I'd really like to get into a little bit later is also like some things that we can do in acknowledging, like, okay, if I know that I'm navigating the world quite easily, what are the privileges that I'm not aware of, and who's falling short of those, and what can I do to demand more for people? Is it that at work I'm saying, like, hey guys, this room's looking very similar, you know, what do we do here? Or is it that my favorite brand, if I'm noticing that they're not doing something, am I sending them an email to say, hey, I actually fit your customer target, but I'm actually going to start shopping somewhere else because you're not representing enough people here, and that's my choice. And I think it works both ways, from people like yourself being able to help the businesses to create a more inclusive environment, and also our power as customers and in that privilege customers to say, hey, you know what? I want you to do better, and I'm going to show you that with my money, you know, or with my buying power or whatever that is.
Yeah, definitely. And they're all good points, right? And the one thing that is often missing is building that empathy. What you raise a lot of things that at the same time I could challenge you and say, well, it's hard to build empathy for someone who's never experienced racism. It's hard to build empathy for someone who, like, I've got curly hair, right? Let me tell you, trying to find products here is impossible. I need to ship them from Canada and the US. And most of the time, like, some of these companies don't actually ship to international, right? And I've got to like literally rake my brain to find ways to, you know, find hair products. So it's easy for me to keep telling you, well, build empathy, build empathy, build empathy, if you don't know what to build empathy on. You're talking about makeup, like finding foundation. Oh my God, I literally need to ship things because I literally have one foundation that I use because it's the only one that fits my skin tone. Before moving to Geelong, I was living in other regional areas in Australia. Like, my experience in Australia has mostly been in regional areas. So I was living in Perth. I lived in different parts of the Northern Territory. One thing that, and that fountain, that the only thing that I use, or from the only brand, they only have it at Sephora. And there's no Sephora. At the time when I was living in those places, regional places, there weren't any Sephora stores. So, okay, fine. How do I get a way to do that? Okay, now me, I'm going to have to look online to see if that brand can sell it, can send it to international. Oh, they don't send it internationally. Okay, now I need to look for a Sephora store. Like, the amount of time that I have had to spend online to find ways to be able to get the products that fit my skin tone, that is part of the building empathy for people when you're designing things, right? If there was someone that's literally listening to this now and would be like, I need to, and who's not probably, let's say, a person of color, and who's like, I want to understand what it's like for someone who is dark skinned like me to actually look for products in Australia that fit them. I'd be happy to show you. You'd have to observe the frustration that I've gone through. You'd have to observe the amount of tabs, internet tabs, the amount of emails, messages I sent, just to be able to access something that you can just go to Priceline for. You know what I mean? So like little things like that is the reason why as well, like now there's been a much more massive movement of Black female entrepreneurs who are breaking into industries like beauty, hair, and whatnot. And what I'm hearing about and reading about is even these women struggle to even get investment because the investors don't look like them. So how do you go to a white male who's probably never had curly hair like me to go, hey, by the way, my people or me, we actually need certain types of products for our type of hair because our type of hair is often dry. So we need to continuously moisturize it. And if you go look, literally you can Google search like how much money Black women spend on their hair. It is a $1 billion industry. So if you're an investor and you want to talk money and you think that, surely you'd go, yeah, of course, let's do it. We see a problem. So many people are solving them. But often the answers of what I'm reading and listening to and hearing is that they can't identify with it. So they're like, well, good for you, but like, why should I invest, right? So I'm learning a lot of that as well. And I'm myself and I'm going, wow, like, is this going to be me when it comes for me to get to that point in that time where I'm going to look for investment? Or do I think strategically, like, and I tackle this differently, you know, like, do I don't know, build a service and then build a product from having a service? Do I build a community and like hope that my customers and my community like are willing to invest in my business? Like you end up having to think outside the box, but it just makes it a lot harder to get into business. And, you know, it's all great to keep saying like, yeah, persevere and have grit, you can do it. But at the end of the day, like you said, if you're not facing those roadblocks as often, then you are doing okay. It's different.
No, 100%. And even like when you were saying that, there's no way that I would, even if you did take me through your frustration of finding foundation, right? Even if you did take me through that whole process and I was working for the foundation company and I was like, well, this is what we need to do to change it because this is a Black woman's experience or this is a darker skinned person experience, whatever it is. I still also then don't have that is like the 12th thing that morning that you've struggled to do or find. Like there's still so many other layers to it that I would never be able to understand. And what I heard you saying there was like, even if we do show the numbers, even if we do show all these things and start doing it, there's still roadblocks within the systems and the businesses already, because look at it, you know, there's already lack of diversity in them. So the people that we do need the yeses from, the people we do need that support from and all of that. I mean, I'm sure there are people listening thinking like if they wanted to start something tomorrow, they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to start that thing and not thinking about all of the other possibilities because a lot of stuff has kind of come easier, you know, or is packaged easier or whatever. And I think the saddest part about like getting older or just opening your eyes more and exploring the world more and being able to gain more perspectives and hear different people's stories is you really do sadly realize how the world doesn't give a fuck. Like there's so many times where they just don't, it does not matter how great the idea is, how driven the person is. Like sometimes it is unfair. On the flip side of that, the beauty of today is there are so many alternative ways, like what you were saying just then. You've just named like three other ways that you will make what you need happen. Like it's frustrating that you even have to get to that point. But in saying the beauty of online is that there are so many people that I know that there's hundreds and thousands of people that are feeling these frustrations that you're feeling, you know, and can get behind you, can build your own space and your own community to start infiltrating or making these changes for you as well. Again, that is a whole different ballpark, and I'm sure that you won't have to even get to that point and you'll be fine without it. But just so that I didn't end that on a doom and gloom of the world's fucked sometimes.
But like, and I think like there's nothing wrong with saying that. You've got to acknowledge when like shit has hit the fan. Like you need to, because then how do you think critically about finding alternatives and getting creative to finding alternatives? I think our generation and coming generations, like we are somewhat lucky in the sense that we are now shaping a different world that doesn't look like anything that it used to look like. Technology has become part of our day-to-day life. Like we are literally talking in front of a screen. Like, you know what I mean? Like these things have changed. So, I mean, the younger, and I'm seeing it now, like I literally, like a few months ago, I was invited to do like a little talk to my high school in Montreal. You have like students that are in what you call here year 9 to year 12 who were in there and just asking me questions or hearing me listening to my journey. And what I really loved was the fact that I was like, wow, like they actually have access to that. I wish I had access to that then. But then I can't say I wish I had that access. It didn't exist, all right? It wasn't a thing then. So that's cool. But now it's a thing. So can I actually leverage on that and create the world that I want to see? I remember like there's this quote from Gandhi that says, be the change you want to see in the world, right? We don't all have to be the next Gandhi, or we don't all have to be aiming for that. Like, again, going back to that question of legacy, we all are leaving our mark somewhere. So it doesn't matter how big or small it is, whatever you do has an impact. So think about what impact you're creating and how much you're investing into that impact. And it's okay. Like your contribution, like you inviting me is an impact towards me and vice versa, and also to listeners. So it's not like you're not creating like the podcast, you know, the Guinness World Records podcast. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't have to be like the biggest thing. It's just every little piece of action you do will impact others. So we're all part of something. We all leave a legacy, and you know, it's a matter of just knowing what you want to contribute at the end of the day, and you make the world a little bit less doom and gloom. But acknowledge that if that's the case, then it's okay. Now think creatively, think critically, and then find alternatives. And don't be scared to not find the answers. Go and explore, like, you know, fail and learn from it. Keep moving along and trying to find what that solution might look like.
100%. And I'm such a huge advocate, and anyone who's listening, if you listen to the podcast often, you'll be annoyed that I'm saying this again, but it is like finding your own small contributions that you can make, whether it's like mentoring someone in your workplace, whether it's like asking and speaking up for somebody else, like in a meeting or something. Like those tiny things go such a long way. And it's the way, like we said, the world becomes a little less crappy, you know, each time if we all can get caught up in that. Because I think often as well, the more you do open your eyes, the easier it is to fall into feelings of apathy and being like, well, there's no use, like everything's going to be bad. And don't worry, like we all get there in our own time often, you know, we all have our little crisis of like, it's not going great. Then being able to go back to your why, I think is that part that really brings things back. And going back to where we kind of started this off, the only way you can get to your own why is by exploring and by taking these risks. And I'm putting risks in quotations. Nobody can see that, but I'm putting risks in quotations because God forbid at 25, you don't stay in a bank job because it's quote unquote stable, you know, and instead decide to, you know, teach in Mexico and explore new things and meet new people and understand new ways of living that you can experience. I mean, then look at you now, you're like in Australia as well, and you're like doing all of these incredible things. And the way I came across you was because you were speaking at an event, you know what I mean? And there's so much more beauty in being able to do that, which is incredible. The other thing that I wanted to touch on when we come into like UX design and how we can build and create like more human-centric technology, I think I recently was saying something, and it's something that I'm really trying to push against with Millennial Crisis and running in-person events. Like using digital, we definitely need digital in order to spread the word and reach a lot more people and all of that kind of stuff. But the in-person, like the human aspect, is often lost, and is why millennials are, and Gen Z are, the loneliest generations, because we're lonely by design, right? It's so easy for us to pick up the technology and ignore everything else and consume instead of actually taking the time to connect, to build relationships, to do the work that we actually need to in order to live and survive. So how does bringing a more human side to like developing technology, what does that kind of look like in your eyes? How do we make technology a lot more human?
Look, it goes back to the initial thing, right? Put people first, invite them in, understand their world, make it about them before you're building technology. You know, you're talking about millennial crisis, and a lot of it, you know, I noticed recently that you reached people all the way in Boston, like, which was pretty cool. So congratulations for that. That's really amazing. So, you know, if it was a matter of, you know, you've noticed that there's a problem, then it would be, okay, let's say I approach you and I say, hey, Demi, like, what are some of the issues you're going through? And then you tell me those X, Y, Z. I want to hear your story. I want to identify what are some of the challenges you're going through. So again, it's about conversation. It's about listening, actively listening, right? There's a difference between listening and actively listening. You can be listening to me right now, but like you wouldn't give two shits as to what I'm actually saying, what you're hearing, what I want you to hear. And at the same time, part of actively listening is that sometimes you end up picking up things that you need more understanding and deeper understanding. So that part of discovering your users, like that's the most important part. So spend a lot more time doing that bit, finding that human side, because then when you get to that point of developing the product, it will have the human side, because the people who you've invited into these conversations, they have been part of, you know, giving you the buy-in. You've built a relationship with them. You can actually observe and see if things are too complicated or not, right? Because oftentimes we are often blindsided if we're so stuck in an idea or the certain skills we've got, or, you know, you're probably a programmer or an engineer who knows how to build something, but then realistically speaking, it doesn't really make sense to a normal person who's not in your world, right? So removing yourself from that. And then it goes back to bias. It goes back to like, you need to check in your bias, because if you think that you are creating something human because you know what you know, then sorry, but you're not in the right position to talk, because you're not going to be using that product in the end. The people that you are discovering about, their motivations, their fears, their challenges, they're the ones who are going to be using it. They're the ones who are going to tell you, I'm in, like, let's do this. Like, I want to help you launch. Those are the words that you want to hear. So the more you can learn about your customers or your users, the better. I guess it's kind of like this quote that I had heard, putting a product in front of someone and asking them to marry you, like no one's ever going to do it. Like no one's going to, like if I just threw at you, hey Demi, like here's this, like buy it. And you're like, no, I don't want to buy it. Like, what is that for? So, you know, I guess it's kind of like dating. You got to like keep trying. and until you get to that point where you ask them, okay, well, will you marry me? And then they'll say yes. So just keep getting to know the people that you're designing for and check your biases at all times.
That was amazing the way you articulated that. And I think it's always important for us when we are navigating anything or to always like reflect on ourselves and be like, okay, like not only what am I contributing to like help this problem, but what am I contribute, like what am I doing that's contributing to this problem? And it's one thing that when we have our discussions, we always encourage people to do. It's like, we don't want you to just complain and say like, oh, this is a really big problem and we see all this problem happening. It's like, okay, well, let's see how you're actually contributing to it. Are you actually contributing to it because you're not doing anything to work against it? That is contributing. I always say this to people. I'm like, if you can't admit whether it's internalized or not, that you are racist, sexist, homophobic, ableist, all of these things, then you're lying to yourself, because that's what the world is reflecting, right? The world is reflecting this one shaded kind of world and idea of what works and what has worked in the past. And we do often have to check in with ourselves to say, what did I do this month? You know, how am I checking in on that this time? And the same thing happens with a product and a customer. Your customers are going to change. They're going to evolve. You're going to learn more about them, right? And you're going to have to say, what are we doing to contribute to the non-growth of this product or the dissatisfaction of our customers and all of these kinds of things? And conversation is always what things come back to, right? It's listening before we speak or do or take action in a lot of ways, which is, it's annoying, right? It's annoying that the world changes. It's annoying that things happen. It's annoying. There's lots of like annoyances in our life, but that's the reality, that it's continual learning in every sense, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And the continual learning, you know, you could turn it into habit so that it's sort of engraved into your mind, right? Like, it doesn't only have to be in like your professional world. It could be in your personal world. Like for me, yeah, like living abroad has been continuous learning. Like I just can't stop. And at the same time, it's a thing of it's personality. You have to stay curious. You know, the more you think you know, you don't know, keep asking questions. There's no such thing as dumb questions, because if you don't ask, then you remain ignorant. If you remain ignorant, then you don't get enlightened. You just have to keep asking and be honest with saying, look, I'm not sure, but I'm going to ask you that and let me know if like I've offended you or not. Someone is more likely going to be responsive than you just either saying something, blurting something, and then makes absolutely no sense, or you've got no empathy at all for what you said, or was completely insignificant for you, but you didn't notice that it actually can affect you. And I'll give you an example. So I do triathlon on the side. So that's
casually,
like swim, bike, run.
Casually, yeah, you I know. Just do triathlons on the side. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like waking up in the morning. You just go swim, bike, and run. Obviously not at the same time, right? Like it's just like one leg after you train for one leg a day. So I was running with a group of people and I was wearing all black, right? Look, I'm only the only black person in that group. So at one point they made a joke which sounded insignificant, but had they understood the context of the joke, they probably would have been careful. So I was wearing all black and I was running a bit behind them. And they're like, oh, like, look at you looking like a robber, right? So you might go, and you know, people were laughing and whatnot. But at the same time, what has happened or triggered into my psyche is, number one, the fact that you mentioned that without knowing that Black people are continuously stereotyped as robbing, stealers, or some form of criminal, you're perpetrating that same stereotype. Although it's insignificant, but at the same time, like, just think about it twice. Like, was that even necessary? And that was just like the context. I was wearing black and whatnot, but, and you know, some people might listen and go, oh, but this was taken out of context. The problem is that my day-to-day, what happens for me, and going back to technology and how, you know, we're constantly being put out information that you and I might not see the same thing. But it just so happened that I had read a post recently about another police shooting in America, in the United States of America. Again, another Black man that gets shot by police, right? Like, everyone has seen what it looks like with George Floyd, but before everyone had seen what was happening with George Floyd, I was continuously seeing things like that to a point where I've got a younger brother and, you know, I started seeing as well from afar how a few things were changing in Montreal where there was that police brutality. And for me, it started to scare me because that's not what I grew up in. So it does trigger and it does create something in your psyche where although an insignificant comment was made, unfortunately, that was the first thought that came into my mind. It was, okay, this is triggering the fact that they're stereotyping me as a Black person. But I didn't say anything to them because, again, I was like, out of context, they didn't really know what they were talking about. I could have, and I'm sure some listeners would have probably been like, I would have said something. But I choose what I want to, quote unquote, fight against or fight for. If we're in a situation where we're sitting down and able to actually listen to one another, then I can bring it up if this comes up again, right? So then I can go, actually, careful with you saying that. So little things like that, right? And it's not to scare people to not talk at all. Like, it does happen. Shit happens. We say wrong things. I say wrong things as well. But it's just check in with yourself from time to time, right? Like, just was it necessary to have made this comment? Not really. I was wearing black because those are the clothes I'm wearing and it's cold outside, but the fact that you identified it as for robbers, but not knowing that as a black person, we keep getting stereotyped, that may affect a person.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's also about, like, it could have been me making that comment to you, let's say, not understanding the context of what all of those things happen. And making the mistake is one thing, right? Unfortunately, I'm sure you're used to lots of different versions of that situation. But then it's about when you do have those opportunities where, let's say, you did sit down with me and we're talking at dinner and we're having an open conversation and you go, oh, just like, similarly, the other morning where you made this comment about me looking like a robber, we can often easily get on the defense to say, oh, but I didn't mean it like that. And it's a really difficult thing to do because as people, we struggle with criticism or being wrong or not doing something right and making mistakes. That's like another thing we as people like need to work through and actively work against. But it doesn't matter the joke or whatever the comment that you made, whether it was ill intent or not, it either hurt somebody and also contributed to something that is bigger than you. And so you can just sit and listen and be like, I'm so sorry. You're right. That was my complete bad. And knowing that situation, knowing you, knowing these things, like you would just be like, great. That's the end of it. I'm glad that I've gotten that off my chest. It's allowed me to like move forward in this relationship better and be able to kind of, obviously you'd hope that person didn't do something like that again. But as people, sometimes we get in habits of using the same things or saying stupid things all the time by accident. I find myself often saying things and putting my foot in my mouth in ways that I wish I never did, you know? But again, like we said, always like checking back in and saying like, oh, I did this thing, or being able to come back. Like, I wonder if in a lot of these situations, like now, sometimes I find myself too texting people even days after saying like, oh, I said this thing the other day to you, like, I'm sorry how that came across, something like that. And it's a hard thing to do as a person, but it's equally harder to be someone on the receiving end as well, you know? And again, it comes back to that conditioning and culture shift and knowing that you're actually pushing away from that and saying, no, I know that this is how the stories are told and the way things are perceived now, but let's actively push against it. Before we get to my final questions and the challenge that you're setting for everyone, I wanted to hear if you had any advice for somebody right now who is struggling to figure out what their why is.
That's such a good question because my 25-year-old self didn't even know what the why was or understood it. So it's very challenging then to tell someone who's in that situation to find out what their why is. Look, there are so many different things. Like there's the ikigai, so that Japanese term that looks at like, what do you like, your passion, and how you can use that to, I guess, find who you are and at the same time, like, what you want to do. There's also what I remember my dad telling me is know what you don't want, because it's a lot easier to know what you want. And that helps. Like, example, you know, at 25, I kind of felt like I didn't want to live the stable life as much as it sounds crazy, but I didn't want to work at a bank forever. I needed to figure it out. Another thing, make a list of what you've done in the past 7 years and where you want to go in the next 7 years. And reason why I say 7 years, look, it could literally be like 5 years, but it was because I had hit 7 years of living abroad and I felt lost. And I remember because it was after New Year's, like a few days after New Year's, and I literally was bawling out of control at like 4 a.m. And I felt lost. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. So I ended up writing in my notes on my phone, like, what have I accomplished? What have I done in the past 7 years? And I started typing and I started realizing, oh, okay, actually not bad. Like, well done. And then I told myself, okay, well, what do you want to reach in the next 7 years? And I started writing a few things. So even though, like, probably I went back to that list like 3 years later, it's just the fact that you can articulate it and go towards it. I haven't accomplished all of the things in my list and it's okay. Just do it, learn from it. You'll know whether you like it or not. I went from banking to education to not-for-profit to hospitality to events. There were always bits and pieces in each industry that I was like, no, I don't think this is for me. Like, and it's fine, but I tried it. You know, and it was hard to break into those industries because they always expect you to have heaps of experiences. And that's why I got to that point where I'm like, look, I don't want to fall into that paradox of like, you need the experience to be able to work somewhere, but if no one's giving you the opportunity, then how do you get the experience? So I thought, you know what, just create it. Create your own experience. And that's how I started Propel Innovation. So I've had to learn a little about the web, learn about technology. That's how I ended up finding my why, understanding my why, knowing what my mission is, knowing that, you know, I want to see more representation of people who look like me. I didn't have that. So I hope that, you know, in the future, emerging generations can see that it's doable. And at the same time, wanting to be able to create safer and unbiased experiences with the design and development of technology. So that's how I was able to get to my why. And look, I have a look, like I literally have a list of whys, but we're going to stick to those two.
I love that you've also mentioned that you have a few whys. I think that's really important. We get stuck on like needing to have like one thing. And I'm really also glad that you said like, oh, like, yeah, you can do the like ikigai and you can do all these like activities and stuff. But unless you're doing and trying and experimenting, you're never going to figure out those whys, you know, and it is whys is a really great way to put it. I think everyone does get stuck on needing one. Now, my final three questions for you, we've got to dive into them because like I said, I could end up talking to you for another hour, I feel. So my first question I have for you is what is the first small step you took to get to where you are right now?
I think as an entrepreneur, I still remember the date that I created my ABN, my Australian business name. And that little small thing meant that was it. Like, I am going to start living the dream I've always wanted to live. Insignificant maybe, but I think that sort of put a stamp as like, this is the beginning.
I love that. That's amazing. The next question I have for you is what is your biggest millennial crisis right now? And I define a millennial crisis as a privilege problem that consciously or subconsciously affects your mental health or well-being.
Wow. This isn't like a one sentence answer, right?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Okay. Well, I guess the millennial crisis I've got, and I could only speak as to at the moment because I'm living it at the moment, I'm actually struggling as an entrepreneur, struggling because I can't find a direction, struggling because it's a lonely journey to be an entrepreneur. And look, there are so many people out there who are doing their own thing, but I'm constantly not finding the person that can give me direction. And I use the analogy of the game Snakes and Ladders, but I'm constantly feeling like I'm hitting a snake and constantly going back to square one. So I'm struggling with that a lot. And yeah, and it affects my mental health. It affects my mood. Even this morning, I struggled to get up, but I got up. I had to take a bit of time before getting into the rhythm of what I'm doing. And I've got a few things in place for me to help me. And that's what triathlon helps me with, building my mental endurance. So at least with that, it helps me to just keep going and accepting that, you know, there are days where literally like my brain space is not in whatever I need to think. And I'm like just watching Netflix, like so much Netflix, because it helps me to switch off and recalibrate and find energy. And yeah, talking to my parents, like just letting them know that, yeah, I feel like shit. and thinking, wow, I don't even know, like, is it because things aren't going well that is this a sign that, you know, I failed and I need to give up and move on or not, you know? So yeah, it's a lot to mention, but it's where I'm at right now. And I think what I've learned along the years is find ways to either build your mental endurance and or find your support system.
Thank you so much for sharing that and for being so open and candid. I think that's going to help so many people again, because the assumption is that like it just happens and it's easy breezy. And I'm sure if you had never mentioned that when everyone saw things, they would have thought, oh my God, how is Junie doing all of this? It's amazing. It's incredible. And that was so honest and real. And I can definitely relate. I think it is when you are building something, you know, support and community is so important. I mean, I built a whole community to try and solve that own problem for myself. I was like, I need accountability somehow, you know? And that was why I always like make a joke at that. Like I did it selfishly, like, sure, I'm helping people, but like, this was for me. But yeah, no, thank you for sharing that, and a brilliant millennial crisis at that. And then the final question I have for you, and I promise this is more fun, is what is one thing you are still curious about or would like to explore?
Oh, wow. Seriously, those questions are amazing. I love just learning. I am a constant curious, and I'm not trying to copyright the actual name of Constant Curious by TED Talk. It's just real. I want to learn to get to the next stage. Like, for example, I've signed up for the Empowered, which is like an education program to understand how investors think and whatnot, because I'm like, okay, this aligns with what I want to do in the future. Like if I make money, I'd love to be able to invest, right? Look, it's hard when you're constantly curious to find just one thing.
No, I love that. I love that you couldn't just stick to one. I think it shows how much curiosity you have in you. And I think even like your story of how you got here just reeked of curiosity and following those curiosities, which is amazing. And now you have a challenge that you'd like to set for our listeners. What would you like them to do in the coming weeks?
Yeah, so I sent you a link with resources on everything that's around anti-racism. They're from articles to books, videos, and it would be good to just, you know, look at the list. The list is really long, so don't get overwhelmed by that. Choose what you enjoy. If you're more of someone who likes to consume film or reading, or just reading articles or books, choose your segment. And from that segment, and it's a very interesting segment, because if you're someone who's raising children, there's a segment for you about that and so on and so forth. I'd love to be able to hear what you've learned from picking that resource, reading it or filming it. What have you learned that you didn't know about?
No, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that link. And I'm excited to dive in and see something as well and watch something. I'm a visual person, so I'm definitely going to be in the video realm of things and take a look. What I think would be great is whatever social platform you have, or feel free to DM if you're not comfortable sharing online, but you can tag me, tag Junie. We'll take a look into what platform that is.
Yeah. And, you know, like even there might be questions that pop up, like write them down and don't be afraid to ask them.
Well, thank you so much, Junie, for all of the absolute gems you dropped on us today. It was so, it was such a pleasure to speak to you and to understand more about how you got to this point of doing such incredible work. And yeah, I really do encourage everybody, if you did hear something that Junie said and you do want to get involved in any way, do reach out to her. All of that information will be in the show notes. But thank you so much. And it's just been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.